All right, guys, welcome back to another episode of the We and Me podcast. Today we have Brittany Simon with us. She is a YouTuber and a... How should I say that? Should I just
honestly,
say... How do you say
all of
it?
The yeah. things, all of the things will be true. I'm a YouTuber, content creator, an educator, a helper of alternative lifestyle and lifestyle people. I do all of the things.
So that's Brittany, everybody. She does all of the things.
I really do, though. It's ridiculous.
I know. I know. It is a wonder to me that somehow you do all those things, because I'm over here with DID and I can't do all the things. I got 10 other people helping me and I can't do all the things.
Well, I don't know if they all give you different kinds of energy, because most of the time sleep is like the biggest issue, right? Because you still need sleep.
Yep.
And I like sleep, so that's also a part of it, is like I actually do love to sleep when I can, but you know, things have to get done, and then, of course, I'm up anyways in the middle of the night, because I don't get sleep anyways, but...
Right,
one
right.
day.
One day. That's what I always say. I'll sleep one day, friend of mine. Mm-hmm. We have those conversations all the time. You know, someday, I'll get to sleep, but right now, I don't know. It's just...
Right now, we're recording a podcast.
Right. Exactly. So, for those of you who aren't familiar with Brittany... We came across her YouTube channel some time ago, and again, for those of you listening, you know what I mean by we. I mean myself and my parts. It focuses largely on BDSM education. She had posted a video, though, talking about her mental health, and she has BPD, for those who don't know, that's borderline personality disorder. Thought it would be a really great thing. We are, by the way, thank you again for coming on, because we are super excited that we're going to able to discuss some of these differences between BPD and DID.
Yeah, I'm stoked.
Yeah, definitely. And it is possible for those diagnoses to go together to where someone with DID could have BPD and vice versa, but that isn't necessarily the case for everyone. And I think that getting a little bit more explanation about some of those, like some of our similarities, because I know we've talked a little bit about that, but also some of the differences in the diagnoses are kind of helpful. Mm-hmm. Can you, just for some of our listeners, can you share a little bit about your journey to getting your diagnosis?
Yeah, of course. So I struggled solo for, 15, 20 years. We can't decide, my therapist and I can't decide when it probably started.
Okay.
Because borderline personality disorder is a mood disorder that can stem through childhood trauma or environmental factors. Some people think there's even a predisposition that could occur. Essentially, it's the idea that you feel emotions like 5% more than everyone else, and you're balancing constantly the right appropriate reactions to those feelings. It was kind of the way that it was explained to me, and I like to explain it to others. So I was at a position in my life where everything was relatively smooth, except I just couldn't find peace within myself because I was always battling this thing in my brain, which I thought was like depression or anxiety or PTSD, which it was all of those things. But on top of that, it was also the mood disorder. And so I didn't have any tools whatsoever to handle that. And what therapy gave me were those tools. I went to therapy for the first time a couple of years ago. I got diagnosed after two therapists. I tried the first one, completely disregarded me as borderline. Completely took it off the table and did like 6 sessions with her, only to have her decide I needed pills and I needed a psychiatrist. I felt that was a valid concern and I was open to pills, but I felt like I didn't do enough on my own before moving there, and I just wanted to make sure. So I got a second opinion, and the second therapist actually diagnosed me with borderline, and she started me on DBT, and right away, first session, it was like the coming of Christ. It was beautiful. It was great, like true inner peace, and it was lovely. And so I continued with her until I moved out of state, and I have been so much better for it since. Just genuinely happier. I cannot articulate how much better I have done since going to that particular therapist and getting specifically DBT.
That's fantastic. We know a couple systems, meaning a couple people living with DID, who also have a dual diagnosis of BPD.
Mm.
And they've discussed the massive benefit of DBT in their life as well. Can you expand on that a little bit, if you don't mind? The DBT and how that kind of works, the processes there?
Yeah, sure. So DBT is dialectic behavior therapy. It was created by Dr. Marsha Linhan, who is actually located in Washington State. I was extremely fortunate to have had my diagnosis in Seattle and to have had a therapist who had trained under her, who had directly learned DBT from her, who could then translate it to me and help me in my existence. And I genuinely was very, very lucky. I probably... statistically shouldn't be used as like an example of how most people's journey will go, but I did less than a dozen sessions with her and I feel like my whole life has changed. I'm 29 and DBT gave me this tool that apparently my brain just doesn't do naturally, which is the ability to process information faster than my emotions.
Right.
So what will happen is somebody will say something and my brain will automatically feel like it hurts or it's rude or it's cruel. And what I have to do, what DBT gave me the ability to do, is to say, stop, assess what was said, like what is honestly happening here, what is objectively happening,
right.
And it allows me to pause my brain fast enough to keep up with my feelings. And it, whether the feelings are anger or sadness or happiness, when I feel joy, I'm pretty sure I also feel that 5% more than everyone else. Because when I am happy, I'm like stupid happy. And it's kind of obnoxious, but it feels like I'm floating, like I'm at Disneyland every time I'm this happy, where it feels like nothing could go wrong. And that's a really special emotion because I haven't felt that happy in ever. So this is the first time in my life I can genuinely say, I think I know what happiness feels like.
That's fantastic.
And as an adult, especially understanding all of the cruelness and maliciousness of the world, I can still see joy. I can still process happiness. I'm no longer drowning in the news. I'm no longer drowning in negativity. All I see them now is as problems that I can help solve. I don't see them as burdens anymore. And that's kind of really special. And I really do think without DBT, I don't think I would have gotten there. I think I would have been overwhelmed for the rest of my life if I didn't get DBT. And DBT can be done in group or it can be done singularly. So I did it singularly, but I know some people do better with group. I just never got to that point of needing group or deciding to do group. I just, you know, I did what initially came to me and it just happened to work. But you have options. And I actually would argue that DBT would be great for people who even don't have borderline because it is so structure-based. And I really like structure. I think humans really do better with structure.
Absolutely. Thank you for explaining that. Yeah, you explained that really well. I know that a lot of people message me and ask me about that, and I am familiar with it, but I have not done it because for us, we have tried, and there was some struggles with that initially in therapy. We are going back to it, and I think largely one of the problems is just my brain and the way that I think about things, because I do that to a degree already. A lot of our listeners know, like, I don't experience things in an emotional way. I process them, but not through this filter of happy, sadness, joy, anger, or anything like that. It's just, this occurred. Okay, why did that occur? Okay, so that occurred. And a typical person would probably laugh at that, so I'm going to laugh. Or, like, yeah, it's just the way that I process a lot of different things. So in a way, I get what you're saying about, hold on, stop. And figure out what it was and the appropriate responses to it.
Yes. Yes, that's so fascinating. So you don't... So that's fun. So I'm fighting. So when it happens, I have to, like, fight my reactions. When it happens with you, you have to sort of encourage a reaction?
Yes.
Would that be a right word? Okay.
Absolutely, yeah. That's one of the reasons... Yeah, that's one of the reasons why I think you're so interesting.
I mean... Well, now in this moment, it's kind of cool to meet somebody whose brain processes information in a very unique and polar opposite way of mine. And so that's kind of cool. I wondered with your experiences, does it feel like, I don't know how you would describe your other selves in terms of brain processing. Do they process things differently? Or
very.
Do you each part. How do you say it?
I say part. Yeah.
Processes information differently. That's so fascinating. And then do you feel their emotions or do you feel more like, or is it just all processing void of emotion?
It's different now in therapy. Earlier on, when I had, so one of the first parts of myself that, and listeners, you're going to hear a little bit more about my story. So one of the very first parts that I had met in therapy of myself was anger. That's her name, capital A. I had an instant migraine. Instant. It was like someone kicked me with soccer cleats on in the back of the eyeballs. And it was an instantaneous reaction. Migraine, tried to run to bathroom, didn't make it. So in that regard, I felt the physical sensations of her. I myself didn't feel angry. I felt the physical response of my body to such a high degree of emotion. And now, though, several years into therapy now, I still get the migraine, but the physical sensation isn't as heavy unless she is coming in to protect. We work together. We're a system that functions heavily under consent and negotiation. We're not a dictatorship. We work with each other. We communicate with each other to try and figure out how to best live the full singular life that we want to live now. So we do this advocacy work together. It's not my parts fighting me, one of them going and getting a job, even though I can't physically work. My body can't sustain it. It's not all of a sudden, poof, I disappear and I'm in a different state again. That was my life a decade ago. It's not my life anymore, which is massively beneficial. So what you're talking about with advocating for the benefits of therapy with BPD, I always tell people with DID, it's going to take a while. Because with DID and BPD, both, there can be a big struggle for people trying to find help with both those disorders. And I always tell them, I was like, listen, it can take a long time, but it's what you want to do. I can't give you some magic fix. I'm not a doctor. Right. No part of me is a doctor. We always tell people that.
And that's where I'm struggling right now, honestly. Because I plan, so my journey into schooling is starting the spring, hopefully, if everything paperwork goes correctly. And it doesn't matter to me if it takes 5 or 20 years, because for me, it's just, I'm learning. And I'm learning specifically about people whose brains function like my own, because I want to help people. You know, I was raised in the 90s and the early 2000s, and I had never heard of borderline before. I had never heard about it until I was diagnosed with it.
And right.
I didn't grow up in a mentally healthy household. I, you know, even now, today, my own parents, it's like some days they acknowledge it, and then other days they're like, oh, you're making it up in your head. Like, they get really frustrated.
Yeah.
And it's one of those things where, you know, therapy gave me this amazing tool, which is to say, I know that you are processing my reaction this way, and I appreciate your presence in my life, but for this moment, in order to heal, I'm going to go home, and I'll see you in a couple days when I'm doing better. And it's my way of knowing that they just don't have the tools to know how to react appropriately, and I've learned to separate that. Before, my parents were extreme triggers, extreme, and now my mother has a tendency to get under my skin in a way that, like, is very impressive, like, I swear to the scale. And I, you know, and I have to be able to be the bigger person. And that's the part that's even harder as children of parents who are triggers, is that the people with the mental health challenges have to be the bigger people sometimes, because it's our sanity over anyone else's. And I didn't grow up in an environment where my sanity could be helped or saved or protected by anyone but myself.
Right.
And maybe a couple of my siblings who eventually, you know, started to believe in mental health. So it's kind of one of those weird places to exist in. So that's why I want to go to school, so I can eventually be on YouTube and say, I actually do have a PhD, or I have at least my master's, and I can help you. Because right now, where I'm just this person who's trying to figure it out as much as anyone else, I just have a few more tools that I can hopefully give to others during the process of learning, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. That, congratulations, by the way. That's really exciting. I didn't know that.
Yeah, I'm really stoked about it. I think it should be, I mean, honestly, I'm looking forward to it. I think it's going to be awesome.
Absolutely, yeah. I will definitely keep an eye out for updates on that, because that is very exciting. I know a few people with DID who are psychologists. They have their PhDs, and they function very well. They have smaller systems. So for everybody listening, Brittany's saying she's going to go and she's going to be going to school and getting her PhD, or at least her master's, she said, and BPD or DID, those are the two that people talk about how they're the extreme of some trauma disorders and that. But that doesn't mean that you can't live the life you want. It just means you have to adapt and change to what works best for your functionality.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. I'm 100% aware that it could take me... I haven't been to school in 10 years, so yeah. I don't... It's been a long time, and it is not my job to compare myself to others. It is my job to hold myself up to my standards.
Right.
And my standards tell me that it is okay to take your time getting through school because it's better to be the best and to make sure I'm actually processing what I'm learning rather than to fake my tests or to bullshit school. Like, I know so many people who just didn't pay attention in college because they wanted that degree to get that job. I don't need the job more than I need to understand my own brain.
Right.
So I need to understand so I can eventually have a job where I'm actually helping people through therapy versus... I know a lot of people who get into medicine for the money, and I get it. We live in America where people are like, be a doctor, you know, you'll make a lot of money,
you
know, and I get it. Like, I just want a sustainable lifestyle, but I mostly just want to be able to say, hey, I'm going to help someone the way my therapist helped me. Like, it saved my life. We're talking about somebody who is working 90 hours a week and hustling, but I wanted to kill myself every 2 days, to somebody who rarely thinks about dying anymore in any real sense, and has far less episodes than I've ever had in my whole life, and knows better when they're happening, knows how to communicate to my family, knows how to say, hey, I'm so sorry, you know, I'm just having a moment today, so I'm just going to need some space, you know, versus before it was like hysterical crying and it was too late. I would wait till it was too late because I wasn't sure what was happening.
Right.
Like, therapy just reassured me that I was as insane as I thought I was, and it wasn't just nothing. It wasn't something I could change. It was something that I needed to literally go to therapy to work on. Because 85% of people with borderline won't, quote-unquote, cure themselves, won't get better.
Yeah.
They will maintain the symptoms. And so I can't be so vain as to think I'll be the 15%. I can only make sure that my life is consistently getting better because I'm getting better.
Right. Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. I think that's actually one of the more healthy approaches, because then you're coming at it with a realistic lens, right?
Mm-hmm.
So you're looking at this, you're like, okay, so this is what's happening in my life. This is what I can use to correct these behaviors, but then this is what I can do in therapy, because therapies work. Everybody I talk to, I'm like, therapy's not like you just go there and you sit with your best friend and chat. If I wanted to do that, I would have saved our time. I would have saved our money. My parts would have never bothered trying to do it because they would have just called my best friend and been like, hey, Jess, I need some help. That's not what we needed. It's a whole different thing. But as long as you're looking at things in a realistic view and say, okay, like you said, with going through college, saying, hey, you know what? I know that this could take me longer than someone else.
Yeah.
But this is your standard you're holding yourself to, a higher standard than largely a lot of people have. And that isn't even the measure of it, though. Do you see what I'm saying? Like, people who are listening as well as Brittany, to where you're setting this up for yourself, because this is your goal, this is what you want, and that's kind of the purpose of life.
Yes, I was raised thinking about the individual, and I was raised thinking about, you know, how to figure out happiness. And for me, I just genuinely want to know more. So if I could go to school to do that, I'd be happy. I'm happy to go into debt for education as long as I am being reasonable and smart with it. But
right.
I do have a plan with it. I have a plan, but I want to really know. Not just pretend I know, not just rattle off statistics that I've memorized. I want to know this subject the way I know BDSM. The way I talk about BDSM,
right.
I want to talk about the science with mental health. And I'm not there yet. I don't have those tools, but oh my gosh, I am so ready. And so the little that I'm doing now, just understanding my own diagnosis, is preparing me. I never knew. If you talked to me 4 years ago, this is not where I thought my life would go. I thought I was going to die by 35. I thought, what was even the point? Like, you know what I mean? And now I'm sitting here, and I've got this 50-year plan where I'm like, got it. I know exactly. I'm going to grow so old, and it's going to be awesome. You know, because for people who are consistently suicidal like myself, the idea of growing old is an honor. It's something for me, like, I cannot wait to have wrinkles and gray hair. I'm not dying my hair. Once it goes gray, that's it.
Ooh,
that's it, man.
Yeah.
You know, maybe streaks of blue or pink once in a while, but
sure.
I want people to know I made it. I lived. I did it. Every time I look in the mirror, I want to be reminded that I made it to 72 when I thought I was going to die at 35. You know, like, this is a beautiful this is a, like, this is a moment of, like, you are the heroine or the protagonist of your story and you should own it, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. That's actually really interesting because that is very similar to us. I only have very few parts that struggle with my getting older. And that is more because they're much younger than me. I'm 31. So they're much younger than me now. And when they look in the mirror, they don't necessarily even see my face. So it's very tricky. It's like a depersonalization to where they don't actually connect to my body anymore. Not my adult body.
Do those parts live in sort of this like frozen in time area, like a safe space?
It would be considered and defined as a safe space. That can get really detailed for some systems. So there's like an internal world where they go and care for each other or just lay dormant. It depends on the system. In therapy, it came up like last year, I think, or maybe 2 years ago now, but we were talking with our therapist and we were discussing some of the differences within systems because, as many people out there know, I struggle with different parts having different birthdays. That to me seems strange. It happens a lot within the DID community. I am not bashing anybody for doing that. Don't mishear me. But for me, it seems strange. And this apparently, that was true for my parts as well, and I just didn't know that at the time. But through therapy, I came to learn that because they were discussing one of them in particular, Jinx, for those who know her. She was talking to our psychologist and explaining to her that, no, we have one birthday. And we have one birthday, or we don't, or other parts don't even have a birthday. We celebrate Erica's birthday. My birthday is in the spring, in April. And they celebrate my birthday because that is another 365 days that we survived. That is a big milestone to them. That's how they look at it. So when you're talking about you want to live to 72, you're not going to dye your hair when it's gray. You're going to just let it go because then that and the wrinkles and everything, it proves to you that you've survived this long. They do the exact same thing.
I love that. I think it's really for some, you know, people, it's really important to sort of acknowledge those what seem like small steps to other humans is a big leap in the faith we have in ourselves.
Yeah.
We trusted ourselves because that's what I'm doing, at least to speak for myself only, is I am trusting myself to continue existing. I'm saying we've got this, we can handle this. Like it seems like the world is, I don't know what the world is sometimes, but it's going to be fine. Like there's a system I've put into place to keep me kind of heading in that direction, but it is hard because it can be very alienating because I am creating a thing in my head that nobody else can see and I can only communicate it. And it's kind of, it's a thing. It's a whole thing.
No, I think I get what you're saying though. Yeah. Because I do that quite a bit. In fact, that's one of my problems. And I was one of the problems for my parts when they were trying to find help years ago and trying to get a doctor. They always tell our current psychologist that I was the problem. And for people with DID, systems living with DID, there is often, they'll express that there is a fear or danger to a few of the parts within the system. So they are afraid that those parts will hurt them if they go to a doctor, or they are afraid that those parts might bite somebody because it's a small child part and they don't like to be touched. So if somebody accidentally touches them, then they might try and bite their hand to protect themselves. There are all sorts of different examples of this, of course, but it just depends on the system. So when you're talking about some of that like mapped out internal plan that you have and stuff, I do that all the time with my thoughts. My thoughts are an ever-growing tree. To where branches,
I love that imagery.
Branches just break off everywhere. Yeah, I've actually considered, we've considered, because a few of my parts like the idea of getting a massive willow tree on my back.
Yeah.
And we would just add another branch to it every year on my birthday.
Aww, that's so good. I love that.
Thanks. Yeah, it was just something that came up.
Gosh, I love that so much. Also, this is going to sound so weird, and I just want to say now because I'll forget. Your voice is so soothing. Like, it is the perfect podcast voice. I love it. Seriously, I've been listening to some people recently, and I'm like, your voice, though. And that's how I feel about my voice, but I really like your voice. It's perfect.
Thank you. I mean, obviously, we know quite a few different people with DID, But we know a lot of different people in the mental health community and everything that encompasses. So whether it be someone who is just taking care of and maintaining their mental health, they don't necessarily have a mental illness. They're just consciously aware of their own mental health, which I think is an amazing thing. And that's been happening more in the last like 5 to 7 years. And just having that recognition of the differences between mental health and mental illness. But if you maintain your mental health, you can potentially prevent certain mental illness if you're on top of things. You know what I'm saying by that? Like, not that you can prevent a brain disorder.
Right.
But barring environmental factors.
Yes, of course. I mean, obviously, I would hope that as we learn more and more about why certain things come to be or how they come to rise, we can then make decisions, especially when we're child-rearing, to help our children not have to have the burdens of our unique experiences because they're going to have their own. I always joke, like, we're not going to save our kids from burden. We're just going to give them different ones. And that's kind of how I like to see it. So I would prefer that my child not have borderline because it has been, it's really hard, but if they do have it, then I'm going to have the skill set to more than reassure them that they're going to have a fine existence all the same. It's just going to be a little bit more of a challenge and we're going to work around it because it's not like I mean, as a parent, I think we all have this ideal, like perfect baby in our heads. If you ever think about children, but it's one of those things where I have to accept that my child might have challenges that I as a parent will have to be ready for. And I really want to be ready. I want to be ready in the way that my parents honestly could never have had the tools to be ready for me. They came from a very different world in Iraq. There's no way that Iraq would have given them the tools to handle mental illness. They were busy trying to escape dictators. Do you know what I mean? So
absolutely.
I don't really fault my parents, but I do sometimes wish they would just listen to me when I talk about how modern science has helped us avoid some of those things, because that's what I would like to do for my future generations of people is just reassure them that, you know, we can do better by our people. That's it. And then if you have something that's interesting and unique, it's okay, because hopefully we'll have the information to help each other move through it.
Right.
I was very lucky, again, being in Seattle, and now I'm back in California, so I don't have that exact group anymore, but I am lucky. Every time I look up borderline, I see DBT stuff for it now, so I'm excited that Dr. Marsha and her work has really spread, because she has borderline, and the medical community really was neglecting us, and she said, fine, I'll do it then, and I love that. I love that one of us had to do it.
Yeah.
You know, because sometimes that's what it takes.
Yeah, it absolutely does. Actually, that's one of the exact reasons why we began doing what we do, and that's what we tell every group of doctors that I speak to, any group of psychologists, anytime that we go to do one of these public speaking engagements, a living DID talk, whatever it is that we do, when they always ask the same question, how is it possible that you can do this when it's so triggering, and why do you do it? I tell them, I was like, I do it because I want to be irrelevant one day. Yeah. I don't want any other generation of kid, because there is nothing I can do about child abuse. I don't have the tools to combat that, because that is a global problem.
Right.
But I can show you how to do your jobs better, because you're at a college level. Those academic facilities, they are just disappointing. The education that you're getting, you should be disappointed in, because you are not learning about trauma disorders. That is the thing that you're going to run into. Trauma. That's the thing. That is a global problem. And in some areas, of course, it's worse than others. Do something about it, though. Like, learn as much as you can about these different topics and different people who speak about them and all of those, and all of that entails. But that is what I always tell them. I do it because I want to be irrelevant.
I love that. I love it so much. And by the way, I think understanding trauma is going to be the biggest and largest shift that needs to happen in the States to kind of understand what it looks like. Because I have, every time I say I have PTSD, and people always tell me, oh my gosh, I didn't know you were in the military.
And every time.
Every time.
Quick service announcement. Lucky. Stop doing that, please. Go ahead. I didn't mean to interrupt you. I'm sorry.
No, you're good. Please. My whole family's interrupting, so it's great. It's like I'm at home right now. I think that is a fine stereotype given the amount of association it has with the military, but I think it's also a disservice to the other citizens that exist in our world.
Right.
And I think that once we get to be, and this is where I think translations become issues. When we say we want more inclusive language, what we're doing is we want more reality-based language.
Yeah.
Truly, if we just keep associating PTSD with the military, we're never going to actually tackle the issues of PTSD. And, like, PTSD, by the way, and we all, you know, because our trauma will be different, it is... Right. I mean, I don't remember the last time I slept without, like, cold sweats and didn't have nightmares when I, you know, with the exception of when I actually can have medical marijuana on the way to sleep, like, mm-hmm. that stuff has really helped me. But I'm sitting here thinking about all the people who don't even know they have PTSD and they're just in denial or they don't know and they're wondering, why am I not sleeping or why do I have nightmares or why, you know what I mean? They don't even...
Yeah.
And we live in a country right now that isn't ready to kind of tackle those. They say it with all these campaigns and these school campaigns, but no one's actually having the conversation. They
right.
just pretend to sort of talk about it. And it's kind of weird to
it
me, I guess.
No, I agree with you. That it is very strange. Unless they stand to gain something from it, then they might run under the heading of, I support veterans with PTSD.
No.
We should raise money for mental health awareness. We should do this. What about our children?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
But then they don't.
Great.
They don't fix their own behavior
right.
that caused the trauma in the first place.
Right. Yeah. It's exhausting. Nothing political. You and I will get lost in those conversations.
We will get lost in it. But on the subject of, like, specifically mental health,
uh-huh.
regardless of your background or where you come from, like depression and mental illness, like it doesn't. choose you based off of any of those things. It's
right.
just a part of the human condition.
Yeah.
And so we have to figure out ways to better, I guess, minimize it to the extent that we can.
Yeah.
While acknowledging, I think, that being a human is a really interesting challenge. Existing is a very interesting challenge, at least for me. I mean, it's really, every day is an interesting, it's like it takes like 10 of my spoons just to be a person.
Yeah, I can agree with
that. Part of it. And it's, you know, it feels exhausting. Like, sometimes it feels, and tell me if you feel like this, but sometimes I feel like I'm sitting in a restaurant, and I'm the only person who's awake, where I'm like, does everyone know they're just, like, in a, like, they're just doing the same thing day in and day out. No one's really living, and it feels like a movie. Artists have described this feeling a lot through art, but it feels like that genuinely most of the time for me, where I'm like, huh, like, do these humans know these things are happening, or do they think that, like, that's real? Like, that's interesting to me. I don't know.
I
maybe that's just me.
I don't use the terminology of restaurant. I actually have said coffee house. But, yeah. Same basic idea, but yes. It's very strange because with DID, the dissociation experience for me is like an autopilot. But I'm watching from somebody else's perspective. So it's like I'm watching another person. So for me, it's like all of these people around me don't realize that they're just floating around in like little skin spaceships. I know it sounds weird, but
oh my god, it's so beautiful though.
It's very strange way to experience the world.
What?
It's like,
some artist needs to recreate that. Like if our bodies were our spaceships and we're all, because I call it our vessel. Like I think of
vessel.
It as a ship.
Yeah.
I think of it as like a ship on the ocean because I love the water, but a spaceship is good, a craftsman, because it's really just carrying our minds. It's carrying our subconscious around. It's carrying our consciousness around.
Yep.
And it's kind of crazy. Like, we're just going through. We're just kind of moving through. It's so interesting.
Right. It really is. Yeah. There's so many different things. I know. There's so many different things about it that are really fascinating. But like what you were talking about before, though, with the brain and how people continue to study it and continue to learn, we're actually working on, because the reason that we got our diagnosis was because we had gone to the Mayo Clinic and the doctor that was in charge of my case, he was a neurologist. So we're, he's an interesting guy. We're actually working on contacting his office this week. To see if he'll be a guest, because I have never actually met him, so I think he would be a fascinating guest.
Oh my gosh, wait, are you saying he's the person that diagnosed you?
No, he's a neurologist. He was running all these different tests, he saw my parts, and he sent us to a psychologist at the Mayo Clinic to do various tests or whatever, so
mm-hmm.
apparently he, after that, he noticed some very distinct changes. when I came back to his office that afternoon. And he sent us to the doctor that we still see today, actually.
Cool.
Because she's very trauma-informed, which is not the norm.
That is super awesome.
But one of the things that I noticed, and that I assume he would have had to notice, when I was going through, because I have all my medical records, right, from the Mayo Clinic when I left there. So I'm going through all these different things, and obviously I'm not as skilled at reading test results and charts as a neurologist, but that's not what I'm saying. I happen to find the brain and body fascinating. Even when I was a small child, I read medical encyclopedias that my dad had because he worked for a thrift store. So he got a bunch of medical encyclopedias.
Yeah.
I read them all the time when I was little because they were just interesting to me. So upon reading some of these different, like these different charts and stuff like that, some of my results that were, some of the brain scans that were done, look like completely different brains were scanned.
Whoa.
It's wild. And because I had
That's like magic.
But because I had my diagnosis, I looked into it. And apparently that happens to a lot of people with DID. When they have multiple MRIs or different brainwave scans done, it looks like different brains in some instances. So that's
fascinating.
I really want to talk to him.
Guest. Yeah, that would be a really dope guest. Just to be able to explore that. What a cool science is so cool.
It is.
Whoa.
Yeah, but when
it's so reassuring too.
It
for
is.
Me, it's reassuring.
Yeah.
Gosh. So there was this, before I was diagnosed, I was really against going to get diagnosed. Not because I was against the diagnosis, but because I was definitely afraid she would tell me or he would tell me I was normal. And that freaked me out because it didn't feel okay. Nothing I was feeling felt, but people kept telling me it was no big deal. People feel this way sometimes. It's all in your head. And I was like, are you sure? Because I feel like this is not what other people are going through.
Yep.
And it felt I was very insecure about getting diagnosed. And then I had that first therapist who didn't diagnose me for 6 sessions. She was just like figuring me out and then claiming, you know, I felt like her assessment of me was making it worse almost because I was having more, it was just not great.
Yeah.
And then the second therapist, just the relief of just knowing what was wrong and then having her be right was really reassuring. Somebody actually asked me, they said to me, you seem too high functioning for a borderline. Are you sure you have borderline? And I was like, well, the therapy's working, so I don't really care.
Yeah.
Like, if this is, I mean, I know I have borderline. If I didn't have borderline, I would be very shocked at this point because everything fits. So, like, I don't know. But I get what they're trying to say. It didn't matter to me because I was getting better. It was so nice. And it was so reassuring to know that even if I am not, even if I'm the test animal for whatever we're doing, my future generations are going to be able to look back and say, thanks to that one person or those hundreds of people that allowed science to kind of figure it out.
Yeah.
Because that's what I'm doing. I'm encouraging science to please figure it out because we need to figure it out. We need to help our people. Our citizens are suffering and we fix our minds. I think other things will follow suit. We won't be as angry, frustrated, driving rage. We won't feel the need to hurt everyone at every moment. Like, we'll find great joy out of existing and not just slaving away, you know, because we're battling our depression, our anxiety, or, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's just, we need to tackle mental health in a real way, like a genuinely real way.
Right. Absolutely in a real way. And I think that a lot of that comes from some of these neurologists who study the brain and try and figure out, okay, so this is biological, but now we have to take it a step further and try and figure out how to study how biology reacts to the environment. Because there's living organisms everywhere. There's living organisms that go so microscopic that you need a telescope that like NASA has available. Like that's who has the technology to see that. So you need to figure out all of these different components because you're talking about human-level consciousness as well and how that is impacted by environment plus the biology and makeup of an individual. And it's just, it gets very complex, but at the same time, there are doctors out there studying it, so go you guys, keep going.
Yes, please do it. I promote and support everyone.
Do it.
Go.
Right. Do it. I don't know why that reminded me of like the Ninja Turtles. What is it? The Cowabunga.
Yes.
do it.
I actually had a total, like, a lot of my kinks came from those movies.
Really?
I really gotta, like, it's kinda, yes, I wanna make a whole video about, like, where my top five kinks came from.
Oh my
God. I can really trace it back to, like, my childhood, and I'm like, yep, that makes sense.
Please, please do that.
Hey, that was a good time, man. Those movies really, like, sparked something in me. I was like, oh, yeah.
That's fair. That's fair.
Love it.
I have a question about that.
Yeah.
And in relation to your mental health, your mental illness, and BDSM, how has that played a part in your journey through recovery?
You mean in terms of balancing the BDSM and the recovery through, like, therapy and stuff?
Yes.
Well, borderline in relation to BDSM was never an issue because I didn't know I had it. I thought it was depression or
right.
anxiety that made things harder. When I got diagnosed, though, one of the things I realized I was doing in a negative way was that I was using BDSM too much to cope with my triggers.
Yeah.
And it wasn't working. It was making everything 1,000 times worse.
Can I interrupt and ask a personal question?
Totally, 100%.
Okay. Because I've heard this from a few other people who've contacted us in the BDSM community. Did it become to the point to where it was unhealthy because it wasn't even, it went beyond almost a way to cope to almost like a compulsion? To where you could not settle yourself, your brain, unless you had that BDSM release in whatever way it was for you?
No, it never quite got there because
okay.
No, the issue for me personally was the borderline is triggered by distrust, right? It's abandonment
sure.
and feeling like I can't trust. The way we had set up a coping mechanism with the BDSM and the borderline was to have the other person take control of the situation.
Okay.
The way they would take control was by pinning me to the ground or having me kneel or keeping me in their arms.
Okay.
All of these things when I was not in an episode, which is so comforting. All of those things in an episode felt like I was being, like, raped and assaulted again.
Right.
So it felt horrible. And I didn't know why. Sometimes certain things that were done would calm me down. But eventually it just got really bad because I couldn't trust anybody, even my partner at the time.
Yeah.
And so I had to rearrange how I was coping. Now, the way I found that works is meditation through BDSM is good. Anything that is calming, service is positive because it's allowing me to take my brain away from my panic and it's allowing me to serve
yes.
and do something for somebody else. So
yeah.
those were positive. So it wasn't
like a refocusing.
Yes. I think had I continued on the path I was on, I would have gotten to the point where I was using BDSM in a completely negative way and tainting the positive interactions I've had with it thus far. Because for 8 years, I have had genuinely idealistic scenes with the exception of one. And that's a pretty good record. I know
Absolutely.
Myself well enough. I'm paranoid, so I don't play with people often. But when I do, it's after extreme negotiation. So
mm-hmm.
I set myself up to have less of a chance of things going incorrectly. But when they do, I'm better equipped to handle them because I acknowledge they could go badly.
Right.
I think that helps. And I will say overall, I did this thing after I left Seattle where I went celibate for a year. And then I did a thing where no new relationships, no new intimate relationships. So no BDSM play partners that were new, no sexual partners that were new.
Mm-hmm.
And the point of that was to make sure that I wasn't going from one inappropriate relationship to another, to make sure that my borderline wasn't dictating, to make sure that the next relationship I'm in, I can truly convey to my future partners, hey, this is my diagnosis. These are the ways I can cope healthily with it.
Yeah.
Here's what I can offer you as a partner. Here's what I can't offer you as a partner.
Mm-hmm.
And if that should, you know, and then have it be organic versus before I was building with my former relationship through my diagnosis and it wasn't actually helpful for me. It didn't help me to have a partner. It actually made it so much harder.
Right.
Because
yeah.
my partner, and well, it wasn't that my partner at the time was a totally bad person. It was more like the way Brittany needs to function in existence to stay healthy, it has to be with either no partner or a very, 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 very specific partner. And I've accepted this, and that means the average Joe human cannot be my partner ever.
Sure.
They just can't. Like, I don't think I'm ever going to make somebody happy if they want a white picket fence and barbecues every Sunday. Because even though I want those things, I need very specific stimulation and a very specific existence. I'm going to be like the nerdy scholar that hangs out in her library, but also has barbecues, but I'm going to need isolation time, and I'm going to need time to be alone, and it's going to be hard for whoever decides to grow old with me, but it also can be really peaceful for whoever decides to be my lover forever or my friends forever. They don't have to be a partner. Like, I'm really content with being single romantically for the rest of my life if that's the way it goes. Because I'd rather be single than with people who think they have to be with me, even though it sacrifices who they are fundamentally.
I fully agree with that. That's one of those things that vanilla culture can really take a piece from BDSM about. Communication. Please.
Thorough communication.
Thorough,
real communication.
Yes. Real, not like open.
People will say communicate, and then they'll... I did. I sent a text that, you know, hinted at what I wanted, and I'm like, that's not communication, dude.
That's not what that is.
I just need clear and conciseness, and otherwise, yeah, like, I can't, so my new rule is, like, you can't lie to me, you know, even white lies. I did a lot of emotional labor, a lot of putting up with people's white lies because of their insecurities, and that's fine, that's their journey, but I don't do those things anymore, so I have made it a point to stop lying in every way, which is, again, a very privileged position, because I don't have to lie about my sexual orientation, I don't have to lie about BDSM anymore. Like, all of these things are lies. We've created a society that encourages lying because everyone is too shocked by people's alternative lifestyles, right?
Yeah.
It's kind of a weird place to be in. So you're fighting a mental illness at the same time that's challenging your view of reality, but you live in a reality that nobody really lives honestly. So it's like a weird, we live in a really interesting and unique place. But honestly, I think as society moves forward, we'll be more transparent. And I think that's going to actually benefit our mental health overall.
I think it would. Yeah, I absolutely agree with that. I look at it as, like, we're stuck in this, like, weird human purgatory.
Oh, yeah. Ooh, that's good.
Such this very strange state of trying to repent for something, and you kind of know what you did, but you don't really know, you have no idea, you don't, like, fully remember it, but somebody told you one thing one time, and it made kind of sense, but I think you were just lying to them to go along with it, so it's purgatory. Welcome
to
life.
Oh my gosh. That's really accurate. Like, that's, yes, I resonate with that very much.
It's my perception of the human experience.
I love it. Mm-hmm. Yep, there you go. That's basically what it feels like to me. What a positive note to leave it on.
I know. Well, thanks for joining us on the We and Me podcast. Enjoy your depressing ending.
Hey, you know what, though? There's something really comforting about acknowledging what your existence is so you can better tackle it. So you know what? That's a positive ending. I'm gonna turn it around. I'm going to turn it around and make a positive one.
See what you did there, folks?
There you go. Your positive borderline affirmation for today.
There you go.
It looks like crap, but turn it around and it's smiling at you. It's fine.
It was just upside down the whole time.
Oh my gosh. I love it.
Man. It's true, though, and these kind of conversations, these types of things, they're just important for people to do. If you're living with a disorder, you can't, and this is something that I tell people, too, you got to be accountable for it at some point. You got to take charge of your own life. You got to go to the doctor. You got to try that medication, or don't try that medication, but try therapy, or try meditation, or try DBT. Try is the key point there. Try. And do as much as you can, because we do get people, and I'm sure you get messages all the time from people about BDSM content and BPD and all these different things, and asking for your perspective, your opinion, all these different things. And we get people from the DID community a lot of the time, and mental health in general, doctors, all sorts of different things. I don't know what to tell you. I'm not a doctor. No part of me is. This is just not information that I can help you with. You should go to a doctor. Oh, well, we can't do that. Then I can't help you. Well, I thought you were going to help. My friend said that you helped them. You know what? Maybe I did, but I can't help you if you're not going to do something for yourself. Because A, you're not even in the same country as me, so I don't know how to help you. It's a wild thing. Life.
Absolutely. I really do, but like thousands. One of my borderline videos had quite the amount of views and like 10,000 comments. And I tried really hard, and I go back once in a while to, like, add some comments and to help people out. But I like to tell people, So if I have 1,000 messages every day from people saying, hey, my father's raping me, to, hey, my teacher's doing this, to, hey, I'm doing this, to, hey, I'm a cutter, to, hey, I've been doing this. Like, I get so many messages, and as much as I would like to help every single one of you, I literally physically could not.
It's not possible. Mathematically.
I don't have the spoons. I don't have the education. I can only help you so much. And it kills me because sometimes I do get those messages like, you're my only hope. And it's like, statistically, let's hope that isn't true, because you are on the other side of the world, or you are 13 or 12 years old or 11. Like, I can't legally even be talking to you right now.
Right.
You know what I mean? And that's the other thing too. I had so many young people want to sign up for my Patreon, which I would have loved to be able to offer them advice, but I can't legally help you. I can't even talk to you.
Right.
Like, you know what I mean? It's crazy, but it's, I wish. So what I want to do is get to a point in my existence where I can say with a loud enough microphone, so every parent can hear me, your children are calling for help and they're asking strangers on the internet. You need to be active in your child's health because they are screaming for attention and you are not giving it to them in the way that is going to actually help them. And that's a huge part of it, because I can't do it, like, I can't do it myself. We need everyone to be participants in your, especially when you're making children, please be active in those children's existence. Please help us help those children to be better future adults.
Yeah.
Because it is a huge burden to save the world. And if we all helped a little bit, it could be a little bit easier and faster.
Absolutely, yeah.
Yeah, we can only do the best to our abilities, though, and we have to protect our sanities. I do not feel guilty for having to turn down people because I have to be able to stay alive. If I took on every single person who needed help from me, I would probably want to die all the time.
Yeah, because absolutely.
Because I can't. It's a lot of, I mean, I'm still struggling. I'm still in the process of healing myself to make sure that I'm good to go.
Boundaries.
You know, it's boundaries, boundaries. Ding, 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 ding.
Yeah.
I need to make a whole merch line of called Boundaries.
I will sign up. I want the first hoodie.
Okay, sounds good. I'm gonna start medium. I have so many goals for things like this. Honestly, I don't even have enough time to do the things I want to do as a human.
Right. See, and that's the other thing, too, is that I know that your audience is much larger than ours. And we've seen your videos. You know, we've seen, like, you get thousands of comments. We get hundreds of messages throughout the span of a month. But dealing with that, it's not mathematically possible.
Nope. I wish it was, but it's
math,
not.
The math doesn't add up, and you have to set your own boundaries. Ugh. And people need to, you know, it sounds harsh sometimes, but you have to take care of yourself, too. At a certain point, reaching out is one thing, but you also have to go a step further. It's about action.
Yeah.
Because I didn't reach out to somebody. But I did go to several doctors until one stuck. And by several, I mean dozens upon dozens upon dozens. Until we got help. It's about trying to... And, you know, you get lucky. Some people do. Some people have your experience, you know, to where... We know people with DID who had that experience. They went to one doctor. It wasn't a great fit. They got a referral from that doctor. They waited a little while. Then they went to the referral. And then they got diagnosed. People have that story. They do. Even people with DID and people with BPD, they have those stories. And other times, it's not the way it works out, but you have to just keep going.
Yes, and I will say, if I may, the one last thing I want to leave everyone with, the only thing that I think has been the greatest discovery in my existence was the best thing I ever went into debt for was my own mental health. I know the price. I was really intimidated by how much I was paying, and I was paying a lot for 45-minute sessions, and it felt overwhelming, but holy F, I don't want to die anymore, and oh my gosh, I am so much better off, and now I'm in a path where I am going to make that money back, because I have this, I don't want to die every day, and so jobs and working seems like fun now, versus before it was so hard. And I just want to say, you know, we'll go into debt to cope with our mental illnesses, right? We'll get into our bad habits, like borderlines. We have a tendency to be like addictive in personality. Mm-hmm. So we'll do the things like Brittany used to spend all her money on new cars, and I would do horrible things financially. And now I don't do those things because I got the therapy I needed, and I went into debt for something great. The greatest thing you could ever spend your money on is yourself.
Yeah.
And I spent it on my brain, and I do not regret it. It is worth the debt, worth the interest it's piling up. I don't even care at this point because, oh my gosh, I am alive for the first time in my life.
And you're living.
Yes.
You've figured out how you want to live before the age of 30. That's a huge achievement that a lot of people don't have happen to them. But yeah, I really like that.
I'm sorry, you said before the age of 30, and I was like, what do you mean, dude? I'm like 62 right now. And then I realized it just feels like I'm 62. I feel like I've been in my, I feel like I've lived 20 lives by this point. But yes, I'm not even 30, and that's kind of a, you're right, that is a big deal. I'm going to pat myself on the back for that. That is kind of cool. That's really awesome. Like, just to think about it that way. Gosh, how exciting. See, life feels so much better because it feels just so much more. I understand my existence so much better than I ever did.
And that's amazing, yeah.
Yeah. I think that's why I like talking to you, too, because even, like, I just feel like people who have spent their time being introspective, they are genuinely, I think, just fascinating humans. Like, you're one of the most fascinating humans and brains I've ever had the honor of picking. So, and I know we don't get to talk often, so this is just like a vacation. This is like a vacation.
Vacation time for us on a Tuesday.
I love it, man. I love it so much. Thank you.
Thank you again to Brittany for being on the podcast with us. We always enjoy talking to you as well. Go ahead and tell all of our listeners where they can find you at.
Yeah, so the best way to find me is just to Google Brittany Simon. You can go BrittanySimon.com or just Brittany Simon on YouTube. You'll find me on Twitter, but that's the best way to kind of do it. I put everything under, you know, similar names-ish. Somebody give me my username on Twitter, please. Somebody has it, and I'm like, I need it. But that's the best way to do it. Just Google Brittany Simon, and that's me. Curly-haired and charming AF.
It's true.
Thank you.
All right, everybody, this was Erica on the We and Me podcast. Thanks again to Brittany for joining us, and we'll see you guys later. Bye.
Bye.
I have my own rogue gallery, an old Batman in disguise. I have a tragic story and some people I despise. I have my villains, names and shadow and the sides that will ensue. I have a history so hollow and a story to tell you. Eventually our hero boy forgets and breaks away. His mind wasn't meant for this, he's lying, he ain't okay. Eventually our hero boy will forget he has a soul. And eventually our hero boy, his heart will take the toll. Eventually our hero boy will take what he has known. He'll use his newfound strength to let you know you're not alone. Smile again, getting there was quite a bend, but
we hope you enjoyed today's episode of the We and Me podcast. Don't forget to subscribe and give us 5 stars on Apple Podcasts or whichever platform you're listening on if you enjoy the show. Big thanks to Adam from Compulsive Inc. This is his original song, Rogue. Adam is a member of the DID community that reached out to us via Stevie's Call for Musicians on Twitter. So go check out Compulsive Inc. on YouTube via the link in the description box below. Thanks again for listening, everybody, and we'll see you next time. Bye! Bye.